Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is a hard one to tell. It's about a young girl whose disappearance uncovered secrets hidden within a family. This is the case of Aaliyah Lunsford. On September 24th, 2011, a 911 dispatcher received a frantic call from a woman named Lena Lunsford.
So did the dispatcher ask if anyone could be with Aaliyah?
Honestly, I'm not even sure if that was asked or not. I do think Lena mentioned her mom because the dispatcher told her to call her mom and see if Aaliyah was with her. So she hangs up, then not too much time passes before she calls back saying that Aaliyah is not with her mom.
What about Aaliyah's dad?
That's actually something Lena tells the dispatcher. At the beginning of the call, that Aaliyah's biological dad doesn't even know she exists. But she does have a stepdad, Lena's husband, Ralph Lunsford.
So, where was Ralph at during all this?
Well, he's been out of the house at work, but I'm sure he's home when deputies from the Lewis County Sheriff's Department arrive, so she's not with him. But when the deputies arrive, a lot of things start to happen all at once. And this isn't even just one agency endeavor. The West Virginia State Police, along with the FBI abduction experts, got involved. Though they do quickly rope off Lena's home as a crime scene, they don't contain their search to only the house. There's a whole search and rescue team out in desolate Bendale, West Virginia.
Meanwhile, authorities bring in Lena, Ralph, and two of her kids for questioning. I couldn't find out the details on what was asked and how they responded, but reporting for the Metro News claims that there is something about two of Lena's children's statements that make state police feel like their responses are rehearsed. So now they really want to know more about Ralph's version of events. However, Ralph kind of keeps it vague, but says that things were fine with all the kids when he went to bed, and he didn't even know Aaliyah was missing until he got home from work the next morning. So basically, Ralph's version aligns with Lena's. Basically, they both know nothing.
Hey y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia. Artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
So the thing is, as more evidence comes in, they realize that Lena's version is bullshit because despite them searching high and low, there's no sign of this little girl. And the more they learn about her life in the home they sealed off, the more they think that something could have happened to her there. They find out that Lena didn't always have custody of Aaliyah. Investigators learn that Lena and her husband Ralph have a history of substance abuse, and at some point, Aaliyah and her siblings were actually living with Lena's mother while she was serving time. The other kids, ranging from between 9 months and 11 years old, while she was 8 months pregnant with twins at the time.
Good God.
Just 5 weeks before Aaliyah went missing, she and her siblings had been returned to her mother.
So, let me get this right. They were returned to Lena or her grandmother?
They were returned to Lena. So, they had been with their grandmother. And, you know, 5 weeks before all this happened, they got returned to Lena, which to me is just mind-boggling.
So it's more than just Lena's history. It's the story that she told them about the day Aaliyah went missing that starts to quickly unravel. Because over the next 3 weeks, investigators end up getting footage from nearby homes and different businesses, some even from governmental security systems. And one of them has some pretty serious discrepancies in the timeline that Lena gave law enforcement. So if you remember, she's telling the police that she is out around 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, September 24th, looking for Aaliyah. But the surveillance footage shows that Lena's van leaves the driveway around 9:13. However, she's not like roaming around like she said. Her van headed straight out of town, which to investigators looks like she knows where she's going. You think if you were looking for your daughter that was missing, you would be driving up and down the streets going around your neighborhood.
Like you would literally be stopping, talking to people. If they were in their yard, hey, have you seen my daughter? Show them a picture of her.
Oh my God, I would be busting down doors to find my child.
Yeah. But she hightailed it out of town, and she doesn't come back to town until like 11:27 a.m. The one thing I couldn't find while researching this case is exactly where she ended up. Just that she booked it out of their neighborhood and headed straight out of town. But there was something else said that they could tell she was like heading for the highway. Because I mean, I was like, what do you mean out of town? Like to a neighboring town? But sadly, they don't seem to know exactly where she went. But either way, she gets back at 11:27. And that's when she calls 911. At this point, 2 months went by with no sign of Aaliyah. Investigators did something interesting. I got to thinking, I mean, they're 2 months in and they're, you know, are already missing posters of her. However, they decided to release new ones. And Court, I'm not sure if you'll find this as unsettling as I did, but do you want to describe it for everyone?
So, the missing poster is actually of Aaliyah. She's not smiling, and she has a bruise on her face. I mean, out of every photo that you could have of your child? Why would you choose that one?
Right, and in all honesty, I'm not sure how recent the picture was taken. So I'm not sure if this picture came out before the first set of posters came out, or if, you know, they were kind of just like searching something and they found it and that's where it came out. Now, I did see on one website, which I'm taking it with a grain of salt.
What did it say?
It said she got the bruise on her face from hitting it with a door. However, Metro News had the same picture with the caption that says it's from alleged abuse, but there's no official reports that I've seen in my research. Now, I'm not sure about this, but I have a theory on why they released this one picture of her. I feel like they did it so they could say that there is suspected abuse, just to see if anyone would come forward. Reporting for WCHS-TV, they talked about Lena getting interrogated by the FBI. Now, I don't know what was asked, but I do know that she kept giving the "I have no clue what happened to my daughter" answer to them, and after that, not too much happens in the case. But in March of 2012, the FBI decided to release a statement about a theory they had about Aaliyah not being taken by an intruder, and that they wanted the public to know they don't have to fear someone coming in and taking their child.
So basically, it was kind of like dropping hints that it had to be someone in the home with her.
Yeah, I mean, they don't say that, and they don't share any details about a person of interest.
But they also say no one is in danger.
Right. To me, I think it's their way of trying to scare Lena, because quickly after, she had her attorney release a statement on her behalf. From the Dominion Post, it said that Lena doesn't think her daughter just wandered off, and she doesn't believe that any blood relatives know what happened to her. So, she's trying to say that the FBI is wrong with their theory they released. In court, Lena's lawyer also made sure to mention that she is cooperating with investigators, but...
But she did lawyer up, which is kind of sketchy in my book.
Yeah, but probably not for the reason you're thinking. So this lawyer is actually helping her prepare for a totally different trial that she had coming up at the time. She had pled guilty to welfare fraud from January of 2012, and she was basically waiting for her sentencing at this point. All of this stems from when she sold like $114 worth of food stamps for $50 and had other accounts of swapping credits for cash. And like, I didn't know this was as big as it is. She actually got sentenced to prison for that, and she's back to spending time in and out of the system. So after 8 months in prison for welfare fraud, she was released in February of 2013. But at this point, she had filed for divorce from Ralph and lost custody of her children.
So, during all this time, did Ralph have custody of the kids?
No. So, like, when she was in prison, the kids were actually with Child Welfare, according to the Associated Press, before she got out of prison. The West Virginia Supreme Court upheld a Lewis County judge's order to terminate her parental rights to all six of her children, including the twins that she had given birth to during this time. I'm honestly not sure how long it would have lasted if she was allowed to keep them.
So, why do you think that?
A year and a half after being released, Lena goes back to prison for violating her probation. During all of this, Aaliyah's great aunt and other family members are worried that nobody is still out there searching for Aaliyah. They feel like everyone has just forgotten about her.
However, investigators say that that isn't true. They've said that they've gotten a $20,000 reward for any information that could lead to her whereabouts or an arrest. They say that all three agencies that were working on this case are still communicating openly with one another. Despite this, Aaliyah's case does go cold.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies, to unexplained deaths and disappearances, to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
In spite of Aaliyah's great aunt's beliefs that Lena and Ralph had something to do with her disappearance, no evidence actually could confirm that. And I want to say just because her case is growing cold doesn't mean there aren't wild theories and tips that are floating around. I saw one where someone said that they saw Aaliyah at Disney World. Another came up when a baby doe's remains came ashore in Boston in June of 2015. I mean, even on Facebook, there are rumors that those remains could be hers. Eventually, the remains were identified as Bella Bond, who was a 2-year-old girl whose mom was charged with being an accessory and her boyfriend was later charged with her murder. In June of 2016, there was another tip, but this time it came from a pagan motorcycle gang member saying that Aaliyah had actually been sold for a pound of heroin. And again, as crazy and wild as this seems, the Lewis County investigators must have felt that there was some truth to the tip, or that it was worth checking out. They even called the family where Aaliyah's older sisters and other siblings were living and told them that Aaliyah may be alive. So like everyone was kind of getting excited, and the siblings and their adopted mom had started getting a bed ready for Aaliyah in case that they might be able to recover her. Like that's how serious they made everything seem. But sadly, Aaliyah never turned up. Each tip was proven to be wrong. So the next big break in the case happened when Destiny, who was 9 at the time of Aaliyah's disappearance, saw the hope and excitement for her adopted parents as they thought about returning Aaliyah with her siblings. The best way I can describe it is like something was eating her alive, like she knew that was never going to happen.
What do you mean it was never going to happen?
So 5 years after Aaliyah's disappearance, her now 14-year-old sister Destiny tells her adopted father that she actually knows what happened to Aaliyah. The story she tells is heartbreaking and horrific. She said that she was in another room when she heard something going on in the other room on the night of September 23rd, 2011. She said when she went to see what was going on, she saw her mother Lena take a piece of wooden slat that came from a bunk bed in the house and hit 3-year-old Aaliyah over the head with it. And Court, I know the stuff we're about to tell is hard to hear.
It's going to be hard, but we have to talk about it to tell her story as bad as what it is.
Exactly. Everyone knows how hard it is for us to talk about these cases that involve children.
So as hard as we know this is going to be, it is important to tell. We aren't going to go into graphic detail, but we are going to tell you what happened to her.
Destiny said that she watched as Aaliyah fell to the floor, but Lena forced her to stay in the corner. And I say stay because she wasn't able to stand after getting hit like that. So after making her stay in the corner for a while, Lena made Aaliyah get up and go to bed. And she still couldn't move well. Destiny recalled having her older sister Kiara help her get her little sister to bed. But Lena took all of Aaliyah's clothes and bed sheets away from her, making her sleep with nothing on the plastic bed. When Destiny and her sister went to help Aaliyah to bed, they gave her some medicine, which she recalls like they were little vitamins, hoping that they would just make Aaliyah feel better. And they also gave her them because Aaliyah got in trouble with her mom and she wasn't allowed to eat anything at all.
When the girls put Aaliyah in her bed, they noticed that the back of her head was squishy and she told them that her head hurt really bad. Destiny remembers waking up in the middle of the night and being able to tell that Aaliyah was breathing. So at that point, she thought she was okay and she went back to bed. But when she woke up the next day, that wasn't the case.
Lena told Destiny and her sister to wake up Aaliyah, but she said that they couldn't. She wasn't waking up. That's when Lena ran into the room and started shaking Aaliyah, trying to wake her up. She even tried giving her CPR, but that didn't work.
Then she took her body and dumped her into a bath of cold water. Destiny said that she and her sisters tried to get their mom to call for help, but Lena ignored them. Once Lena figured out that Aaliyah wasn't going to wake up, Destiny watched as she went and got a hamper and put Aaliyah's body in there and threw more clothes on top of her to try to conceal her. Lena got Destiny and her other siblings together in the van and drove them to some remote area out on a dirt road.
When they stopped, her older sister, Kiara, walked partially into the woods as Lena carried the hamper in further, but she didn't see what her mom did with Aaliyah. During this, the rest of the kids were just sitting in the van, just waiting, not knowing what was going on. Destiny said that she doesn't know how long she was out there, but eventually Lena came back. As they were driving home, Lena was throwing clothes from the hamper out the window. On the way home, Leah also made them promise to keep her secret. Leslie Rubin for WCHS-TV said that Lena told the kids, quote, "Hey guys, we gotta make mommy a promise. Everything's gonna be okay. You just got to trust me and keep this little secret. Can you promise mommy that?" End quote. Even though that's chilling to hear, what really chilled Destiny to the bone is that no one called Leah mommy. That nobody called Lena mommy. To her, it just felt all kinds of wrong.
Like, I honestly can't even begin to imagine what was going through those kids' heads.
When they got home, Lena spent some time cleaning up the house in a frantic way, basically trying to get rid of anything that could point at her for Leah's disappearance. And that's when she called 911. So when Destiny's adoptive father heard this, he eventually gets her to tell the police. And actually, I'm not sure if she does or if he did. I've seen both things in different reports. But I do know investigators end up getting this information. And after they get her statement, that's when they know they need to talk to Kiara next, because she was older. And so, I mean, if anyone could tell the same story, it would be her.
Did she know that Destiny was coming forward?
She actually had no idea that she was going to tell her dad or that she even talked to the police. And they don't just confront her. They actually had an idea because they wanted to know if Kiara had something to say on her own, basically without them even having to ask her. So they decided to bug the home that Destiny and Kiara and the rest of the siblings are living in with their adopted parents.
So, completely random, but did they actually think she was going to just talk about it?
So, they actually had Destiny bring it up, kind of like just naturally as a topic.
So, about as naturally as one could get on something like that.
Right. I mean, Destiny wasn't even sure how to go about this. She was actually scared to do this, but with some encouragement, she keeps trying to bring it up that night. And right before the batteries on the planted mics around the house were about to die, Kiara finally starts to talk.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe,
and watch for deer.
Not only does Kiara say the same story as Destiny, but she also has a few more specific details that she can remember. And when she was finally ready to share her story with law enforcement, she wasn't in the room when Lena hit Aaliyah with the bedboard, but she did tell investigators that it was a pretty common punishment that their mom used. When we talk about the details Kiara remembers, she said that the vitamin that her and Destiny gave Aaliyah was a Flintstone vitamin. She said she specifically gave it to her sister, thinking that she was going to help her feel better. She also told them how she agreed to keep Lena's promise because she was terrified. She said that her mom's favorite line was, quote, "I brought you into this world, I can take you out," end quote. they were young girls that were so scared, so they held on to their mother's secret for 5 years out of sheer terror.
But after telling investigators everything, the next stop was for them to try to locate Aaliyah's remains. So what investigators did, they took both girls out separately, along with search dogs. And Court, you know how bad I am with directions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're the worst.
Like, I need someone to describe the location to me, and I might be able to make it there. But these girls were able to take them to the same area separately, so there had to be something there. It was actually this small, very desolate place called Vadis, West Virginia, which is in Lewis County. Court, I'm not sure if you've, like, been there for work, but, like, have you ever been to or through Vadis?
In all honesty, there's a pretty good possibility I have been through there.
Because, I mean, it's close to Flatwoods, and, I mean, you're all over the state, so I just figured.
There was that, and then I was like, let me look this up on a map.
Mm-hmm.
And from Weston to there, it's a pretty good distance.
Really? I see, I didn't know that one. So once the girls are there, they point out the same area where they thought Aaliyah was. But sadly, they didn't find anything. So now detectives are worried that after all of this time, Aaliyah's body may have been moved.
Do they think possibly by Lena, or it could have been animals?
Honestly, I'm not sure. All that I know is that the remains just never turned up. And I mean, I got to thinking about this during my research, and I mean, there could have been a good possibility that it was Lena, or even the boyfriend, or her husband, who moved Aaliyah's body. Even though we do know of cases where animals have moved body parts, and to this day, the entire body hasn't been discovered yet. One good thing about this is that they do not feel like they need to have Aaliyah's remains to make their case. Destiny and Kiara's confessions are enough, and Lena is finally arrested and eventually indicted on 4 felony charges. In court, I actually have the felony charges in the file. Could you read them?
Sure. 1 felony charge of murder of a child by a parent or guardian, custodian, or other person by refusal or failure to provide necessities. 1 felony charge of child abuse resulting in injury. 1 felony charge of death of a child by parent, guardian, or custodian, or other person by child abuse. 1 felony charge of concealment of deceased human body. And I will just say this, there is a special place in hell for Lena.
Oh, you're like 1,000% not wrong about that. So, Lena's trial didn't start until April of 2018, and it's long, so we aren't going to get into every single detail, but Court, I found that Ralph, Lena's ex-husband's testimony, was really telling. He told the court that the night before Aaliyah died, Lena took all of the kids to the store to buy bath salts. He said that he and Lena used the bath salts the same night, then he had a beer and went to bed. He said when he was going to bed that everything was fine.
They were high on bath salts. He went to bed like he just didn't drink a beer and get high on bath salts.
Yeah, apparently. In court, I didn't know the list of things that bath salts could do to you. And I actually had you look them up. Could you, like, read them all for everyone? Because it's a big list.
Get ready, folks. So, bath salts can cause euphoria, increased wakefulness, elevated sex drive, hallucinations, talkativeness, empathy, a rush, rapid heart rate, chest pain, high blood pressure, hypothermia, excess sweating, pupil dilation, vessel constriction, reduced appetite, muscle spasm or tremors, seizures, a severe panic attack, psychosis, paranoia, agitation, confusion, insomnia, irritability, and violent behavior.
Like, I had no idea all of these were, like, a thing. Honestly, I thought that they just got you high and that was it. But back to the trial. He told the court that everything was fine, and he didn't even know Aaliyah was missing until he got home from work later the next morning on the 24th. Lena allegedly asked him if he had seen Aaliyah when he got home, but he said no, and that she just drove off in the van. So Lena's defense, they kind of went through the whole nobody, no crime BS, because how can anyone determine the cause of death if there isn't a body?
So basically, like, they're wanting to poke holes in the girl's stories.
Exactly. After all of this, Lena was convicted on all four charges that Courtney told y'all about. Every appeal and every request that Lena's defense filed for her after the trial was shut down. In an article by Metro News, she is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for the murder of a child by failure to provide the necessities. And she got the max 40 years for the death of a child by child abuse, and then another 1 to 5 years for concealment of a human body, and an additional 2 to 10 years for a separate child abuse conviction, but all of her sentences will be served consecutively.
The only thing Lena had to say by the end of the trial at her sentencing is, quote, "With all due respect, I feel with no possible way I could get a fair trial in Lewis County," end quote. After the trial's investigators try again to locate Aaliyah's remains, but they never do. To this day, she is still missing somewhere in the state of West Virginia. But the memory of Aaliyah hasn't faded away. Destiny and Kiara and other siblings, adoptive family, the Coles started the Aaliyah Lunsford Foundation in 2018 to raise money for a memorial scholarship. They also got her a headstone so her family would have a place to go visit and remember Aaliyah.
Together, we can make sure that Aaliyah's memory lives on and that her story is being told. Like we said in the beginning of this episode, Aaliyah's story is incredibly difficult to tell. Stories involving child abuse always are. They're painful, heartbreaking, and often filled with questions that don't have easy answers. In Aaliyah's case, there were family members who did speak out about Lena, but it's not entirely clear when that happened or how much they knew at the time. We want to take a moment to say something important. When it comes to reporting abuse, the responsibility doesn't just fall on the family. Yes, family members are often in a position to notice when something isn't right, but so are neighbors, teachers, doctors, social workers, and anyone who interacts with the child. If something feels off, if there are signs of abuse or neglect, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to make that call.
Too often people hesitate out of fear of being wrong or overstepping. But speaking up could save a life. Aaliyah's story is a tragic reminder of what can happen when abuse goes unchecked. It's a call to all of us to pay attention, to care, and to act, because protecting children is a responsibility we all share.
Court, I don't know if you know this or not, but our child protective service system is broken, like seriously broken. I came across an article recently that cited an audit showing West Virginia has led the nation in child deaths tied to abuse in recent years. Just let that sink in. That's not just a statistic. Those are lives lost. Children who were supposed to be protected. And honestly, part of the problem might be the response times. I had no idea until I started digging that CPS workers in West Virginia have up to 14 days to respond to a report. 14 days. And if a child is believed to be in immediate danger, the response window is 72 hours. That's 3 days. 3 days where anything could happen, where harm could continue, or even worse. Now, before anyone thinks I'm blaming CPS workers themselves, I'm not. Trust me, when I say this, they are superheroes in my book. Truly, the work they do, the things they see, the pressure they're under, I couldn't do it, not even for a day. I don't think most people could.
And just to piggyback off what Mark says, it's not the workers, it's the system.
100%. It's the system that's failing. It's a system that underpays and overworks, barely supports the people on the front lines. And it's not getting any better. In fact, some ways it's getting worse. Back in 2017, less than 70% of CPS cases in West Virginia were actually investigated. Fast forward to now, and that number has dropped to around 60. That's not progress. That's more kids slipping through the cracks. And I want to be clear, this isn't just a West Virginia problem. It's happening across the country. This is a nationwide issue. Our systems are meant to protect the most vulnerable are falling short. And until we fix that, until we truly invest in child welfare, in prevention, in education, stories like Aaliyah's will keep happening. And that should never be acceptable.
If you're listening to Aaliyah's story today and you believe that you or someone you know may be experiencing or has experienced child abuse, whether it's emotional, physical, or sexual, please know that you're not alone. Your story matters and help is available. We encourage you to speak up. If you're not comfortable going directly to authorities, consider talking to a trusted adult, teacher, counselor, or someone you feel safe with. Speaking out can be the first step towards healing and safety. You can also reach out to the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline. They are available 24/7 and you can call or text them at 1-800-422-4453. If you'd rather chat online, they also have a live chat option on their website at www.childhelphotline.org. You're not alone, and there are people who care and want to help.
Please make sure to check the show notes at the end of this episode. We'll be sharing a list of organizations and resources that are dedicated to supporting individuals who are currently facing or have faced abuse or neglect. These organizations offer everything from crisis intervention to counseling to legal support, shelter, and advocacy. Whether you're someone who needs help, knows someone who does, or just wants to learn more about how to be a part of the solution, these resources are there for you. We believe that awareness is just a first step. Access to support and real action is what makes the difference. And these organizations are doing that work every single day. So take a look, share them with others, and know that no matter how difficult the situation may feel, there is help out there, and there is hope. We will be back next week with a brand new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.